Marcus Rose. There's a long pass. I tell me, I believe. The Giants come to pellet. The Giants come to pellet. The Giants come to pellet. The Giants come to pellet.
My guest at this time is Ralph Branca, major league pitcher from the 1940s and 1950s. He is the author of A Moment in Time, An American Story of Baseball, Heartbreak, and Grace. You may recall that just last week, the Tampa Bay Rays went to the postseason on a walk-off home run. Historians tell us it's the first time that happened since October of 1951 in the famous shot heard round the world. Mr. Branca, of course, most famous for being the pitcher at that fateful moment in baseball history. And it's a great pleasure to welcome him now on the 60th anniversary of that shot heard round the world. And when you think about how this moment has kind of defined the rest of your life, you talk in the book about how you went from obviously someone who received a lot of epithets and scorn from fans for the team that you loved and played for all those years. What was it like to endure that, and how did you and the community finally get past it?
To be truthful, Greg, I think what helped was that in 1954, I'd been traded to the Detroit Tigers, and my roommate was a left-handed pitcher named Ted Gray. Ted and I roomed together, and then we also locked next to one another. So we were close friends. I was there almost a year, probably May or June of the following year. Ted and I had dinner after a day game, and we went to our room, you know, and he's in one bed and I'm in the other. And he said, I have to tell you something. He said, I was sworn to secrecy, but I have to tell you. So he told me how he learned that the Giants stole the signs from Leo DeRoche's office in direct center field in the Polo Grounds. Now, both locker rooms were in dead center field, like 485 feet from home plate. Leo had an office right at the window on the Giants side of the locker. They had an expanse of seven windows. So Herman Franks and Hank Schenz stood way back in the shadows, and Herman Franks had a telescope that Schenz had in the Navy, a Wolinczak, where supposedly he could see a fly on a chimney 300 feet away. So Herman Franks, who was a catcher, could decipher the signs. And, you know, nobody's on second base. Nobody thinks you're stealing the signs. But Herman Franks would say fastball, and Schenz would push the button once, and the signal will go, since they hooked up a buzzer system, to the dugout and to the bullpen. As soon as the sign was given, they would buzz. And Evaz in the bullpen would keep his right arm still. Nothing would happen. Fastball. If it was a curveball, he'd just move his arm up and down. He had a ball, he'd throw it up and down, or a towel, he'd wave it up and down. And the third pitch, which could be a slider or a changeup, he'd go back and forth across his lap to the left hand, throw the ball back and forth, or wave the towel back and forth. Well, that was one inning. In the next inning, he went to the dugout, and they used a word sign. Socket, S&S, straight ball, socket. Be ready, second letter of the alphabet, B, curve. And watch it was the third pitch, either slider or changeup. So they knew every pitch, and they'd go back to Evaz, and maybe he'd use the ball the first time, now he'd use a towel. You know, nobody's looking at the bullpen. How is he going to see the signs from 455 feet away? So Teddy Gray told me that. So consequently, maybe 6 or 7 years later, I had played high school ball against Sal Evaz. He was at White Plains, and I was at Mount Vernon, A.B. Davis, Mount Vernon. So I called Sal up. I said, Sal, I have a question. I know why you were successful at home, because you stole all the signs at home. But how did you do so well on the road? And he said, we stole them on the road. I went, what? And how did you do that? Well, Herman Franks and Schenz would sit in the center field bleachers, and Franks would give the sign, and Schenz would signal what the pitch was. And I said, you did this in every field? He said, every field but Ebbets Field. I said, why didn't you do them in Ebbets Field? He said, they were afraid if they got found out, they would have been killed. I said, well, I wouldn't have been too unhappy with that. I mean, to be truthful, you know, what they did was despicable. I mean, we rightfully should have won a pennant. We were 13 and a half games in front. Here's a team that was 59 and 51, 8 games over .500. Now they go 30 games over .500 in the last 44. That's almost a third of the season. 51's a third of the season, so. You know, and we played .500 ball, 25 and 25, which was not good for that Dodger team. But, you know, that's what everybody said, just play 500. Nobody thought the Giants would go 37-7.
You became great friends with Bobby Thompson. Did he ever admit that?
Well, he did, but it's not straightforward. Like in the Wall Street Journal article, Josh Prager said, did you have the sign on that pitch? And I can almost say it verbatim. He said he looked at the bat between his legs, then he looked to the left at the fireplace, then back of the bat, and he looked up at me and said, well, if I have to give you an answer, it's no. I said, that's an odd way of saying yes. And then we were at Yogi's Museum, and someone said to him, asked the question, did you take the signs that they... Well, I took them the first couple at-bats, but not in that particular at-bat. And I looked at him and I said, if anybody believes that, I have two bridges to sell you. So in his way, he really said that he had the sign.
I guess your thoughts, sir, also on just the significance of that game, obviously tainted by the cheating that's been uncovered since then, but it was right at the beginning of the television era. It's obviously an historic moment, unfortunately, at your expense to some extent. But what do you think that moment did for the game?
Well, you know, I just think that moment is a moment in time. If you want to believe in folklore and fairy tales, you still think that the Giants won a pennant. If you read the truth and hear all the Giants admit that they stole the signs, like the Wall Street Journal article, documented proof that they stole the signs. And even another point Thompson made, the first pitch you couldn't put any more in the middle of the plate, belt tie right in the middle. And he said, the guys on the bench wanted to kill me. And I go, kill to myself, kill. I never used that verb. I said, what the heck was he looking for? What was he thinking? Now, the second pitch was up and in. I was wasting a fastball. But he knew that's where he pitched him up and in. He stepped in the bucket, and he hit a home run. So all I can say is I have to blame Charlie Dressen because we should have played the first game in the Polo Grounds and the last two at home to have home field advantage. As it turned out, home field advantage won it for the Giants. They had last at-bats, and they went ahead of us, and we didn't have another at-bat, so... Charlie Dressen, number one culprit.
Obviously, that's the indelible moment from your career, but your book also talks about a very important moment in baseball history, and that's when you got a new teammate for opening day 1947, Jackie Robinson. You were among those who stood with him along the baseline and pregame introductions. Others did not at that point, although more, of course, came alongside him as time went on. But what was the significance that you understood at that moment? And as you look back at it now, what does it mean to you?
You know, at that moment, I don't think anybody was aware of what was really taking place. You know, it was new territory. And, of course, blacks lived next door. I mean, I lived in a block that had like four black families and two Irish families, two Jewish families, two German families, and maybe eight Italian families. So it was the United Nations on my block. And as I said, blacks lived next door to me, so they were just people. We played ball with them. We played with or against them, whatever. And so when Jackie came in, I happened to be in the locker room, and I went over and shook his hand and said, welcome aboard. All I was hoping that he could play well and help us win a pennant, because I was not making a lot of money. I was making $6,500, and if we won a pennant, that meant that I was going to end up making some money. And as it turned out, we lost to the Yankees in the 47 World Series. Had we won, I would have made $6,500, but we lost and I got $4,700, which is basically three-quarters of my pay. So it was important. You had to win the pennant to make a little extra money. But Jackie was superb. I mean, he played a strange position. He had all the pressure on him to perform because I think if he failed, who knows how much that would delay the coming of the blacks into baseball. And he was being pulled in all directions by the black people who wanted him to go here, there, and everywhere when we were on the road. And he did have two guardians, Wendell Smith from Pittsburgh, a writer, and Sam Lacy from the Baltimore Sun. And they protected him, actually, from the black groups who wanted him to appear every night in each town we were in. But you know, they were his companions because, you know, we did stay in all the hotels except St. Louis, where he stayed in the black section of town. But I'd have lunch with Jackie if it was a night game, but usually dinner after a game we'd have dinner. And I stood next to him because it didn't mean anything to me. you know. And they didn't do like they do today, where now they introduce the trainers and then the coaches and the extra men. Everybody went up to the line, you know, as is. And I stood next to Jackie. And when I went home, my older brother John said to me, "Are you crazy?" I said, "What are you talking about?" He said, "You stood next to Jackie." I said, "So what?" He said, "Suppose a guy tried to shoot him and missed by 3 feet. I said, "I would have died a hero." But it didn't mean anything to me. I just wanted to know, could he play? Could he help us? And he helped us. I mean, we won the pennant. And he hit .297. He led the league in stolen bases. Played a strange position. Performed admirably. So, you know, if you ask me, did he win? No, he triumphed because he set the stage. He changed baseball. He changed the country. And he changed the world.
Now, just a couple minutes left in our conversation with the great Ralph Branca. The book is A Moment in Time. And, Mr. Branca, most of your career, of course, was spent with the Brooklyn Dodgers. You also spent a little bit of time with the Tigers and Yankees and then eventually finished your career with the Dodgers in 56, which means you weren't there for the 55 World Championship. How much would that have meant to you to be part of that team?
Oh, a lot, you know. You know, as I said, winning the World Series is big. You know, you got a World Series ring. That's what you compete for. You know, that's another point in 1951. We should have represented the National League. And I think we had a good shot at beating the Yankees. Yet, Pitcher Rowe was 22-3. Newcomb probably won, I don't know, 17, 18, 19 games. Erskine won 16 or 17. And I won 13. Only because I didn't really get a start till May 28th. But I was leading the league in ERA on September 1st. And I had 13 complete games out of 19 on, you know, like September 1st. So pretty good going.
Well, it certainly was a very impressive career, and the way you've handled being part of that specific moment has impressed a lot of people over the past 60 years. Sir, thank you very much for your time today, and congratulations on your career and the book.
Hey, Greg, I thank you. The book's worth reading. It's easy read. I've given it to family and friends, and they like it, but maybe they're prejudiced because they're family and friends. But it is an easy read, and I think you read about the old times. You read about Jackie. You read about 51. So I think basically, it's a nice, easy read. The people who read it will enjoy it.
Well, certainly a famous time in baseball history. Again, the title is A Moment in Time, An American Story of Baseball, Heartbreak, and Grace. Ralph, thank you so much for your time today.
Hey, Greg, thank you. Stay well.
You too, sir. Ralph Branca, author of A Moment in Time, pitcher against Bobby Thompson in the famous shot heard around the world 60 years ago today. I'm Greg Corumbus reporting for Radio America.